Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Ed Cooley was named the new head coach at Georgetown yesterday, and we are going to play some of his comments coming up here in a moment. It's time for BetMGM's March matchups. Turn this year's tournament into something special and enjoy college basketball like never before when you take your best shots at BetMGM. Sign up now and get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, player props, and boosted odds specials on the college tournament. Every three-pointer, slam dunk, and buzzer beater means more than ever before when you get a piece of the action at BetMGM. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com to find out why nothing beats betting on college basketball at the King of Sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Virginia only. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offers not available in Washington. This is what Ed Cooley said in talking about the opportunity at Georgetown.
The best guys you can ever be around. But Iron Eagle is going to be talking to me at some point really, really soon when Georgetown wins a national championship.
Whoa! He's predicting national championship. At least he knew Iron Eagle is taking over for Jim Nance next year. This is what Ed Cooley, and by the way, I'm a big fan of the hire. I'm a big fan of Ed Cooley, have been. He was one of the guys that when Maryland had their opening last year, I was very much hoping would be in the mix. This was Ed Cooley yesterday on why he chose Georgetown.
It was going to take a special place. And it is divine providence that I'm here. It's just meant to be, right? It's just that time, the change. I needed a change, but I wouldn't change unless the right place offered the opportunity. And it had to be a partnership and a marriage that would work. And I can see myself here for a really, really long time.
Divine providence, he said, as to why he chose Georgetown. Ed Cooley, by the way, in watching and listening to some of this press conference and listening to his interviews just over the years, this dude can sell it, man. He will get players to Georgetown. I think that there's a bit of an issue Georgetown has always had, and that is, you know, the lack of a true home court environment. But if you win, you know, they will get people to Capital One. They may not sell it out every night, but, you know, you get 15,000 in there with a really good team and heavyweight matchups against Villanova and perhaps Rick Pitino and St. John's. It'll be back. He talked about the history and tradition at Georgetown as well.
There's a history here. There's a tradition here that I think you have to respect. But it is a new era. And it's the blossom season. We're about to blossom as big as anything in America. I can promise you that. And it's not going to be easy. We are navigating ever-moving landscape in college athletics. And we're not going to complain about it. We're going to adjust, we're going to adapt, and we're going to become champions because I think it's important for us to understand that.
Ed Cooley, congrats to all of the Georgetown people out there. You got a really good coach, and I certainly would understand the excitement of having, you know, a big change too, obviously, in the program after, you know, 50 years of family. And by the way, a family that produced a lot of wins, a national championship, plenty of Final Fours, and some really exciting basketball over the years. Okay, I got to get back to this Taylor Heinicke thing because, man, you guys are killing me, which is great because I'm going to respond to some of this. So I read last hour the very nice and classy, I did say that, and I believe that, and high road thank you letter from Taylor Heinicke to the fans in the Players Tribune. There's total sincerity in me saying, this is why I do like him. I do like him. He's smart. He is obviously all that we've talked about as a player, both in terms of limitations and in terms of the positives. But this is a guy who it's hard not to root for. The story is a great story. You know, he's not a quarterback that's going to lead you to what we should all be focused on, you know, which is winning and winning a lot of games in the regular season, getting into the postseason, and then winning a lot of games in the postseason. But for this franchise and what's left of the fan base, these kinds of stories have become, you know, very, very attachable. I mean, emotional. I mean, I'm going to read this one. I mean, I already read you the Sabah DM that she sent me. This was from Rich. Nice job reading Taylor's thank you message. I didn't think you'd do it. Why? Why didn't you think I'd do it? You can't be critical of a guy's limitations and also, by the way, laud some of his positives and then, you know, and think that I'm not going to read his thank you letter or at least parts of it because I talked about how he was kind of lucky at times as a quarterback, how he was, you know, in terms of really measuring what his value was, it was certainly not, you know, worthy of starting 17 games moving forward. Come on, man. Toughen up. We're settling too much. I didn't think you'd do it, Rich wrote. Your takes on him in recent years have been so off the mark. Really? Which one, Rich? He's the most popular player this franchise has had in a long time. You, more than anybody else, should recognize it. You're a team historian, for crying out loud. Well, that's a nice thing to say. I don't consider myself a team historian at all, but that's a very nice thing to say, the nicest thing that you've said. The letter was great. His departure hurts. You've missed this one big time. I've missed this one big time. Certainly from your standpoint and from Sabah's and others, I have. I'm not upset that Taylor Heinicke's gone. I'm not. I mean, I wish him the best. It's not that I'm going to root against him at all. He's not someone for my – I root for people like Taylor Heinicke. I root for the underdogs. I root for the overachievers. I like overachievers. I like smart people and smart players. There's nothing about Taylor Heinicke, the person, that I don't like from afar. I don't know him. And there's a lot about Taylor Heinicke, the player, I do like. But my God, I mean, this one from Sam. You sounded like you were in pain reading his thank you letter. I did? Really? You're just hearing what you want to hear. And the emphasis on him thanking Rivera seemed disingenuous. That was from Curlin on Twitter. No, it wasn't. It wasn't disingenuous. I read the whole letter. Serious question. How many of you, many of you probably think he should be in the Ring of Fame? I'm being serious. I'm not going to take calls on that. Although I bet you we get a couple of people that said yes for what he provided during a tough time and a difficult time in franchise history, he should be in the Ring of Fame. No, he shouldn't. Taylor Heinicke is a backup NFL quarterback. He did leave us with some memories, but not a lot of them. Okay, he may have been the most popular player here in the last couple of years, maybe, but I don't think so. I think maybe he was more polarizing than popular. Terry McLaurin, John Allen are super popular. Tress Way is very popular. You know, I'm not saying that you have to be a good player to be a popular player, but I think Taylor Heinicke, for those in the Heinicke hive, believe that you guys speak as the overwhelming majority. I don't think you do. And I'm not talking about him personally. I think everybody's on board with liking Taylor Heinicke and liking the Taylor Heinicke story. Not everybody's on board with continuing to have Taylor Heinicke be the starting quarterback. And just some of the follow-up I'm reading to this farewell letter kind of emphasizes the point, or at least the discussion that I brought up maybe a month and a half ago about would it be difficult if he were still on the roster moving forward? Certainly dealing with some of you, it would have been difficult, no doubt. I mean, I don't think that people would have been chanting for Taylor Heinicke with Sam Howell out there, but I do think there's a possibility, had they gone out and it had been a normal offseason, and let's just say they had traded for or signed Jimmy Garoppolo or signed Derek Carr. Let's take Derek Carr as an example. I think there's some people that would have been in the stadium after Derek Carr threw his first pick or his first three incompletions in a row and would have been like, this isn't going to work. Let's get Taylor back in there so we can battle for 500. I don't know how we've gotten to this point. I mean, I do. There's one person responsible for it more than any other. It's the beatdown of a quarter century, for sure. Taylor Heinicke's a great dude, clearly. I don't know him, but from afar, I mean, I've had him on the show a couple of times. I've enjoyed him as an interview. I've enjoyed some of the big game, big plays. I mean, the last drive against the Giants in regulation, magic. I mean, there is some magic to his late game. You know, he's got a clutch gene. There's no doubt about it. But he's really not a very good quarterback. If we're all really being honest, and we really, for those of us that watch other football other than just this team, he's not a real good quarterback. He's not somebody that you want starting 17 games a year thinking eventually it'll come around and we'll end up winning 10 and winning a couple playoff games. No, that's not going to happen. I do wish him the best of luck. I don't think we should take calls. No, Neil in Rockville wants me to take calls on whether or not he deserves the Ring of Fame. No, that is condescending. And I made that off tongue-in-cheek remark going into the break for fun. I'm not going to take calls on whether or not Taylor Heinicke should be in the Ring of Fame. Of course he shouldn't be. I mean, Babe Laufenberg was a bit of a legend as well, had a legend to his time. But he didn't play in the regular season, so there is a big difference between Babe Laufenberg and Taylor Heinicke. He played in the regular season for the Cowboys, but didn't in Washington. He was a preseason legend and icon, Babe Laufenberg was here in D.C. back in the 80s. There's a big difference. Taylor Heinicke started 23 games for this team, right? It was around something like 23.
If he's not in the Ring of Fame, do you think he's going to be in their top 100? You know how they add 10 players every 10 years? You think he makes that list?
That's the Ring of Fame.
Is that the Ring of Fame?
I thought. Yeah, isn't it?
Well, no, because they did a like a
top
90.
Oh, no, you're talking, right. Yeah. The 70 best, 80 best, 90 best.
Yeah,
right.
You think he's the 100 best.
Where they had left Trent Williams off the list initially. No, he won't be in the next 10 for the top 100 unless they really suck for the next 9 years, which, you know, is possible. But they'd really have to be horrific. I think Terry McLaurin and John Allen look like locks to be on the next 10 for when we get to the top 100. But no, Taylor Heinicke, you said that kiddingly, right?
Of course.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, I know you said that kiddingly, but there were others out there, I guarantee you, that were nodding their heads saying, yeah, that's a possibility. Anyway. I wanted to get to this trade that the Jets made yesterday, some more NFL news, and also a big reason why three-point shooting in the NCAA tournament is a bit off from regular season numbers. More on all of that when we come back. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and theteam980.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So far in the NCAA tournament, the average three-point shooting percentage is just over 30%. For a while in the first round, in the first weekend, it was below 30%. One of the reasons many people think, including Gonzaga coach Mark Few, is they continue to use brand new, not worn in basketballs for the NCAA tournament. Mark Few said the following to Jeff Goodman, quote, "The last thing we should be doing is playing with brand new slick basketballs. We need to have the ball inflated less and we'd see better shooting and less fumbling with the ball," closed quote. This has been an issue for years. I remember Gary Williams was the first one that made me aware of this many years ago when he was still coaching. And he said, you play during the course of a season with a basketball that's, you know, inflated to the right level, has been worn in a little bit. And look, anybody that's played basketball at any level, you know there is a different feel with different basketballs. And a brand new, rock-hard, slick basketball is harder than a ball that's got really good worn-in grip. And by the way, it has an inflation level that isn't bouncy. You don't want something that's super bouncy, you know, because you end up with more turnovers. You end up with a harder to handle basketball. And this has been going on for years. They use a brand new Wilson basketball for every game. Now, teams have adjusted in recent years. Okay, as they get ready for the tournament, I was reading something about this late last night. They get a brand new, you know, they get all brand new Wilson balls, and they start practicing as they prepare for the tournament with brand new slick Wilson basketballs. But what are they doing this for? Why can't they fix this? You know, if they have a deal with Wilson, that's fine. Why does it have to be brand new basketballs that are difficult to use, difficult to shoot with, difficult to handle with? It's just stupid. Your most important games of the year, the games that are watched more than any other. By the way, in a sport now that has become pretty much the eyeballs are on us for 1 month, that's it. We better make a really good first impression with a lot of people who are tuning in for the first time. And, you know, there's a lot of people that when they end up watching college basketball for the first time in the NCAA tournament, especially if they watch the NBA, they're like, these guys aren't even very good. It's just sloppy. I mean, I watched some of the Golden State Dallas game last night. You talk about high-level shot-making. By the way, there was a very big controversy in that game, which is leading to a protest, which I'll explain here in a moment. But a lot of coaches have had issues with this. Now, they've adjusted by practicing with the basketballs, but what's the point? And if you need to – by the way, home teams during the regular season get to choose the basketballs. So, you know, if you're an Under Armour school, you may be using an Under Armour basketball. If you're an Adidas school, you may be using an Adidas basketball. If you're something else like Nike, you may be using Wilson. And so when you go on the road, you're using a basketball that you're not used to. But you got to practice with it in the lead up to the game. There should be a universal basketball there is in the NBA, there should be in college basketball. Everybody should use the exact same ball at the same inflation level, same, you know, you're not going to get the wear and tear to be exact across the board. And then if you need the sponsor of the basketball to be Under Armour or Adidas or Wilson, just slap one of their logos on a ball that's used throughout. Just change the logo. If the ball's a Wilson ball that ends up being the right ball, just slap an Under Armour logo on it if you have to do that. But there should be a universal ball in college basketball. It's a joke that they roll out brand new slick basketballs that are inflated to the level. Everybody that knows basketball that's played it, especially people who are shooters, you don't like a fully inflated ball. Last night, in what was an outstanding game, I didn't sit there and watch the whole thing, trust me, but I did catch the final few minutes of Mavs Golden State. They're battling to kind of stay out of the play-in situation. But there was a timeout late in the third quarter, a minute 56 left in the third quarter. And when the two teams went to their respective benches, the call that preceded the timeout was Mavericks ball. So the Mavericks believed, as they were huddling up with Jason Kidd and Luka Doncic, Kyrie didn't play last night, that they would come out of that timeout and it would be their basketball. But instead, when they came out of the timeout, they walked to their offensive end, and the referees handed the ball to the Warriors on the Warriors' offensive end, and Kevon Looney had a free dunk. They threw it into him, and he dunked 2 points, and the Mavericks were like, what's going on here? Well, Mark Cuban protested the game. The Mavericks are protesting the game. Cuban said that the refs told the Mavericks that it was their ball when the timeout was called. And he tweeted out, during the timeout, the official changed the call and never told us. Then when they saw us line up as if it were our ball, he just gave the ball to the Warriors, never said a word to us. They got an easy basket. Crazy. And it mattered because it was a 2-point game. Cuban went on to call it the worst officiating non-call mistake possibly in the history of the NBA. All they had to do was tell us, and they didn't. Well, he's 100% right, if that's true. In the pool report afterwards, crew chief Sean Wright disputed Cuban's account, saying the refs had, in fact, originally signaled it was Golden State's ball. There's a second signal, but the signal is for a mandatory timeout that was due to the Mavs. Look, even if that part is true, you have to, you know, if you watch the other team go to their end expecting the inbounds pass to happen, you know, look, everything isn't literal. You'd say, hey, guys, we're putting the ball in play down here. It's Golden State's ball. Get down here. You don't just hand it to Golden State, let them inbound, and get 2 points. Anyway, it was interesting because there's a story about this that there's a very interesting success rate in the history of the NBA with protested games. There haven't been a lot of them, but in 2007, the Heat were playing the Hawks. Shaquille O'Neal was playing for the Heat at the time. And Shaquille O'Neal was ruled out of the game with his sixth foul when actually he only had five fouls. The game the protest by Miami was upheld, and they played the final 51.9 seconds of the game again, replayed that game, because that's when they took Shaq out of the game. The Hawks ended up winning the game. Nobody scored over those 51.9 seconds, but interestingly, Shaquille O'Neal didn't play because in the time between the game that they protested and the game was replayed, the final 51 and a half seconds were replayed, he had been traded to the Phoenix Suns. So he didn't have a chance to play those final 51.9 seconds. It seems to me like if you had said, do these protests ever work? I would say no. But that was the last one that worked, and there's a history of a lot of protested NBA games, and they've got a list of them on ESPN.com over the years that have worked. By the way, there's one major change that I know it's been suggested before as it relates to college basketball, but I would definitely add a sixth foul for fouling out in college basketball. Five is too few. You take your best players off the floor so often, especially in some of these leagues that are officiated so closely. You know, we've seen this in tournament games, and most coaches, interestingly, Kevin Willard doesn't, but most coaches, when their best players, or not even their best players, get whistled for their second foul in the first half, they go to the bench. And they miss pretty much the rest of the half, and they may come back in offensive defensive substitution, you know, and that kind of a format. But they're gone until the second half. I think there should be six fouls. Keep, you know, look, this sport is struggling except for this month anyway. Keep the best players in the game for a longer period of time. I mean, fouling, you know, players out after five fouls, it's not good. I'd keep the penalty situation the same. Seven, you know, for 1-on-1, 10th foul goes to, you know, the bonus plus, and you get two shots. But a player wouldn't foul out until a sixth foul. I don't know why that hasn't been adopted by college basketball. Denton, do you know the answer to that? Because to me, that's a no-brainer rule change in that sport.
No, I'm with you. I don't know the answer. I don't know if there is a good answer, to be honest, because I agree.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what the answer's been in the past other than, well, that's what we do. Well, you didn't have a shot clock forever either. And when you did have a shot clock, originally it was 45 seconds and then 40 and then it was 30. There's been discussion about moving it down to 24. I don't think that's a good idea unless they're going to change the defensive rule where you can only play zone, but you've got a defensive 3-second rule. You can't, with a 24-second shot clock, allow true zone defenses where you essentially can pack in the paint without a defensive 3-second rule, because it takes longer typically against a true zone to generate a good shot opportunity than it does versus man-to-man. And so with a 24-second shot clock, what you would see is you'd see three-quarter court pressure, burning shot clock time off, and then dropping back into a zone and saying, hoist one up at the end of the shot clock against our zone. But if they did that, you'd have to put in the defensive 3-second rule. But I think six fouls is a given. All right, up next, Grant Paulson will jump on with me. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Team 980.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Grant Paulson hosts Grant and Danny with Danny Ruye every afternoon starting at 2 p.m. on our sister station, 106.7 The Fan, which has allowed us to do this every once in a while. Grant's on with me this morning, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. So let me start with a tough one for you, because I'm done talking about Lamar Jackson. I'm not done talking about Taylor Heinicke yet, but I will start by asking you a serious question. If Minnesota decided to make a run at Lamar Jackson and Kirk Cousins was available, let's just say for number 16 overall, or maybe a combination of a second and a third and a fifth or something, would you want him back?
I don't think I would trade a first based on his age and not knowing kind of how much more football he plans on playing. But if you're talking about non-first, mid-round type picks, yeah, I think that's a no-brainer. Now, personally, for me, that would be exhausting, I got to say.
Well, what do you mean for you?
Well, you know this, Kevin. as people
yes.
who have long been correct on Kirk Cousins and the war within this fan base, so to speak, I got so tired of the discussion and was basically over it when it ended that I've just kind of been calmly correct since, as I've watched him ascend to probably being the number two quarterback in the NFC right now. Having said that, while I don't necessarily invite all of the dialogue back into my life, from a sheer football standpoint for the Commanders, I think it would be a no-brainer.
Which discussion's more tiring for you, the Kirk Cousins conversation or the Taylor Heineke conversation?
Ooh, that's a great question. You're spinning a couple of hits Taylor Swift style there. The Cousins one went on for a lot longer. But I would say more recently here, the Heineke one was tough because what we got in that conversation was another reminder, in my opinion, that people can't help themselves with quarterback in this town, and specifically the backup quarterback. I think what frustrated me so much about that dialogue was we kind of saw what it was, man. Like, this guy is easy to root for, right? It's an unbelievable story. Make a movie. I'll go see it and eat my popcorn on opening night. But can we stop pretending like this is something that it's not, right? I mean, this is a very clear quarterback that is an excellent backup who you don't want as a starter if you have plans on winning football games. But people just couldn't quit the player. And if it's a wide receiver like Devin Thomas or – it's a running back you fell in love with, like Marcus Mason in the preseason. That's pretty harmless.
Comparing him to Marcus Mason. Yeah, go ahead.
You know what I'm saying, though? Like, when it's a quarterback, and every time someone throws an incompletion or an interception and you're chanting his name at the stadium, that actually does have effects on the operation. And it is my belief that this head coach listens more to fans and to the media in decision-making than probably any coach I've been around.
Yeah, I haven't thought about him from that standpoint. I think he thinks about what he's going to say right before he says it. And I don't know if he really he may be influenced by what fans and what media think, but I think more or less what he is very much a spontaneous thinker. He's not necessarily a strategic thinker. It's who's my audience and what will appeal to that audience today, because we've seen major 180s on lots of different subjects with him before. But I want to go back to Cousins for a minute because I actually.
Sure.
Legitimately just thought of it before because I know how you think about Kirk and you know what I think about Kirk and whatever the argument's long over. We won it. And that's what it is. But I have read recently where the Vikings could be interested in Lamar Jackson, potentially, and that Kirk might be available. And actually, I think it would take a first rounder to get him, but Kirk Cousins on this team, and I've said this about Aaron Rodgers and Lamar Jackson, obviously, but Kirk Cousins on this team would make Washington an absolute playoff favorite next year.
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind. Yeah, they're a playoff team immediately, and I think they could potentially be a tough out in the playoffs. I mean, you plug a legitimate starting quarterback. Whatever everyone thinks the ceiling of Kirk Cousins is, we could continue to debate that until the end of time. But the fact is, he comes in here, he throws for 4,000 yards and around 30 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. It's something they haven't had since he was here, and before that they haven't had consistently annually since never. And so, yeah, you would immediately become with a good defense and that quarterback and these weapons a double-digit win team and a playoff team. And that's why – they should do it. Remember, he was on the list. I mean, they touched base, reportedly, with Minnesota this past offseason
right.
when they were doing the overturn every stone thing. Now, my understanding on the current situation with the Vikings, and I haven't talked directly to Kirk Cousins, I should point out, but having a decent feel for that operation, what I believe they wanted to do was another one-year extension with Cousins. I believe Kirk Cousins is now in the mode where he wants to finish in Minnesota, if that's possible. And so rather than taking another one-year extension where they may have immediately drafted, Kellen Mond, who isn't terrible, in the third round to then replace him or to begin for life after him, which I don't think would be an unreasonable thing for the record, I believe he wants to play this year, bet on himself, which he's done throughout his entire career. Hope that even without Adam Thielen, and if they trade Dalvin Cook, he has a very good season. They win football games, and then they lock him up for, say, a four-year extension, a Daniel Jones kind of contract that will finish his career in Minnesota. But to your point, you know, I see the same things you do about Lamar Jackson. I do wonder if it's Washington-like, because, you know, I mean, people can't stop writing about the Commanders and Lamar Jackson. And they've never had interest. They've never once been in that conversation. But if they went and got Lamar and Cousins became available, they should absolutely kick those tires. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, the conversation about Lamar Jackson isn't that Washington's been interested. We've all known they can't pull the trigger on that right now. And even if they could, maybe wouldn't. But the discussion about whether or not you would, if you could, is different.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
What do you think about that? If financially they could, let's just say the new owner was here and either wanted to make a splash or had the money to set aside for a guaranteed deal, I wonder if Ron Rivera would be interested, A, after being burned by Wentz and kind of zigging now at quarterback to spend no money, but B, just in Jackson, the player who's missed about a third of his team's games in the last 2 years, and you're paying a nearly unprecedented amount for.
Yeah, I think, so the answer is unequivocally yes. I'd be very interested, but I would be concerned about the money. I'm not giving him a Deshaun Watson-style deal. I would certainly think about, first of all, this team can't do it. I mean, this is hypothetical. You'd have to clear a lot of space. You'd certainly have to keep him with this core group for 2 years before the contract blows up cap-wise and make a run the next 2 years. But the guy's 45-16, even though I don't love tying a quarterback to overall record, but if we've watched Baltimore play, which we have, we know he's been significantly influential in their games. He's 45-16 as a starter. You put him on this team and you've got an opportunity to do something that you haven't done in over 30 years, which is contend for an NFC championship with the team that would be the best offensive supporting cast he's had around him. The injuries the last 2 years would concern me. I'm not giving him Deshaun Watson, but I'd probably make the offer of 133 guaranteed, 175 guaranteed for injury that Baltimore did, which he, I think, is starting to realize was a pretty damn good offer. But yeah, like somebody said to me when we were doing calls on this yesterday, Grant, is this a trick question? As if to say, of course you would want Lamar Jackson. You don't have a quarterback. And that leads me to this. Do you think we have a quarterback?
I don't. I'm not convinced that they do. I am on board with the current plan, though, for two reasons. One, I think that the idea of Sam Howell is enticing. I don't believe he should be viewed as a traditional fifth-round pick. I know you've done the numbers and run them in the research, and so have I. You don't get starting quarterback value in round five, and the guys taken where he was taken really just don't become franchise passers. But I don't think he is a traditional pick at that spot. I think it was a weird year. I think for him specifically, it was a really quirky several months that led up to the draft. And I, frankly, in a conference that wasn't where Old Dominion plays at a school, no disrespect to the Monarchs, that is an ODU, I like the college profile, man. I mean, he had a great year throwing the ball, then a really impressive year running the ball. I think in a trending toward mobile quarterbacks league, he can make plays with his feet. I think basically he's Taylor Heinicke with the faders turned up on every single category. Like his Madden grade, you just bump up by seven, right? He's a better runner. He's a better thrower. He's got a better arm. I think he's going to be decisive. So I think he has a chance to be pretty good. My fear is that he's just a really good backup. But here's why I'm okay with this one way or the other. Number one, let's say he's good. They win. Everybody wins. Great. If he's not, then this entire group is out. And for the first time in my entire life, Kevin, I'm 34 years old, they will, with their new owner, presumably, have a GM that's hired, a real-life football GM who runs the building, that will then hire a head coach, that will then hire a quarterback. That's never happened here since I was a baby and they were winning Super Bowls when I was in a diaper. A GM that hires a head coach, that hires his own quarterback. And I think what I like about the Howell situation is even if it doesn't go well, that the floor here is that the quarterback is not going to be an incumbent for the next group. Gruden doesn't inherit Haskins. Rivera doesn't inherit Haskins. Gruden doesn't inherit Robert Griffin. Like, that's what happens with these bad organizations all the time. And for the first time in forever, it wouldn't happen here.
Yeah, the funny thing is when Snyder bought the team, he inherited a recently traded for Brad Johnson, which was the right move, and he wanted to undo the trade and eventually brought in Jeff George that sabotaged the whole thing. No, I know what you're saying. Here's the one thing, and by the way, I look forward to what I think we all believe we're going to get, which is new ownership, and hopefully new ownership that, yes, hires a general manager, a head of football operations that picks the coach and that makes the personnel moves. I'm with you. It'll be a nice, refreshing change. But finding that quarterback, no matter how you do it, is still really difficult. Whether it's coach-centric, whether it's a GM, pulling the strings, it's just really hard to find a franchise quarterback. And so there are no guarantees on that front. With respect to Sam Howell, I'm intrigued too, but my fear is what yours is, and that is that probably the chances are just as good that he ends up being a really solid backup quarterback as they are that he proves to be a starter, not even a top half of the league starter. So
yeah, I would say that if he was bigger, Kevin, like if he was 6'3".
Well, if he was bigger, he wouldn't have been available in the fifth round.
And there's the rub, right?
Yeah.
He's probably a top two-round guy, and so the whole conversation is different. But let me ask you this. If he was drafted in the second round, just hypothetically, if Washington had taken him in the second round, I believe, and I want to see if you agree, everything we talked about in the national perception where everyone says they can't roll with Sam Howell, they're going and getting Lamar, they're going and getting Derek Carr. I think all that would be different, and I think even you and I talking right now would be different. The whole reason we all assume that he can't do it is because he went in the fifth round. And I understand that that's a reality, but we're basically just saying, we're casting him to the side for that reason. If he was even a third-round pick, like Cousins, fourth-round pick outside of the top 100, very rare, obviously, but if he was drafted a round or two higher, I think we would have more hope than it sounds like both you and I do.
Well, the first thing I would say is I don't think everybody's assuming that he can't do it. I think there are a lot of people that are assuming that he can do it and that prefer to go down this path of, hey, it's Sam Howell. You know, this guy's got the bigger arm and he's Taylor Heinicke, as you described. And people are really excited about the prospects. Look, I'm intrigued, too. I think the way you described it is fair. I think he's obviously a much better thrower of the football. I actually think he's a better runner of the football than Taylor Heinicke. I hope that gets incorporated into it. But it's weird because if they had had their way and he hadn't have played, if Taylor Heinicke hadn't convinced Ron to play him against Dallas, I don't think he would have ever gotten the QB1 label. I think that was... I think that was look over here and forget what happened in the Cleveland game and at the end of the year. We've got our QB1. You can get excited about Sam Howell. But they kind of stepped into it courtesy of Taylor Heinicke pushing. But to your question, yes, I think that teams in general allow more time for bigger investments. And a second round pick would be a bigger investment. They allow a lot less time, and I think justifiably so if you look at the track record of guys picked after the fourth round. They allow much less time for guys that are drafted in the fifth round. And we can talk about him being sort of underdrafted, but he wasn't picked in the fifth round because of a serious injury or some sort of character flaw. There were a lot of teams that passed on him that made him available at the beginning of the fifth round. Teams that needed quarterbacks.
Yeah, and I think that is probably the biggest reason why if I had to go to the table right now and put money down on what he becomes, it's not that he's going to end up making a bunch of Pro Bowls and being a franchise quarterback. But comparative to what they had, to your point, I'm intrigued. I find his skill set to be enticing. I guess what frustrates me about the whole thing is what they're about to do this year, to me, is what you do in the first or second year of your regime. And this is the fourth year of Rivera, a gotta-have-it season, as far as I'm concerned, we don't even know what the new ownership. He could make the playoffs, and they could still want to bring in their own people. But let's just assume that Dan Snyder's the owner or that the ownership has nothing to do with it. In a normal situation, he should have to make the playoffs this year. They've been under 500, and you can say they were 500 at 8-8-1 last year, I guess, with the tie. But since he got here, like the division win thing, it was not authentic. They were a 7-win team. This is the fourth year, in my opinion, not only do you have to make the playoffs, but I think you should have to be able to win probably a playoff game, or everyone should be in trouble. And I guess I'm at a point where it's just amazing to me that there is not more urgency from this operation. It just feels like they're so comfortable. They're going into year two. Let's go get a mediocre offensive tackle, and we'll go get a Wes Schweitzer light guard, and we'll call it a free agency. Like, I just can't believe the seeming and they tell you. I ask these questions to them, and they go, we really like our guys. And I say, your guys keep winning seven games. So at some point, I need you to like other guys too.
Yeah, there's no doubt that if this were a normal offseason, it would be pretty frustrating, because you're right. The fourth year, given what's happened in the first three, should be a playoffs or bust season for Ron Rivera. But I think a lot of the ownership stuff has a lot to do with it. Look, I'm out of time, but real quickly, just give me, because I wanted to talk to you about this, but just give me right now your guess on owner, time frame, price.
I think it's the Harris Group. I think we find something out probably in the next, I wouldn't be surprised if it's in the next week, but I'll say the next couple weeks. I think it's $6.2 billion, and I think it gets ratified and voted on at the May meetings.
All right, Grant and Danny, 2 to 6 on 106.7 The Fan. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
See you, buddy.
Yep.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.